Welcome back to the Roundtable on this Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. It is 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Joining us today for the panel, political consultant Libby Post, Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, and our own Alan Shartok. Good morning, all.
Good morning. I have a question for you.
Yes.
If it's the Roundtable, how round do you have to be on it?
Well, some of us are trying to get less round.
You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. If you want to complain, again, it's alan@wamc.org. You can comment on our webpage as well, wamc.org/roundtable. Today's post is 4/8/15 panel. It's today's date and panel, wamc.org/roundtable. And again, the email, roundtable@wamc.org. Serious stuff to discuss today. Before we start, though, just want to give the props to the UConn Huskies, who won their third championship last night.
Great game. Great game.
Fantastic. I mean, that's a dynasty of classic Yankees proportions now.
Yeah, it was just those women really were, they're a well-oiled machine. There were times when you thought, oh, come on, because they did make mistakes, and so did Notre Dame, but you're in this national spotlight. There has to be nerves, but boy, when they were on, they were on.
It's a team for the ages,
yes.
And the star of the team, and her name eludes
Brianna Stewart.
Right.
From Syracuse.
She has a chance now next year, if they win again, to be on four championship teams.
Right, and she was voted the most valuable player, or whatever it is that they call them.
Amazing.
In the basketball land, but it was great.
Yeah, great, great to watch.
And I'm not a big basketball fan, but it was fun to watch.
And Alan, did you watch it?
Oh, no. I was fast asleep.
He was asleep.
Okay. Rosemary, you're quiet on this.
I was watching news. There was rather some important news last night.
Tell you,
but I do wish that I had this interest, this passion that all you sports people do.
Yeah, that's great.
I know.
Very well said. I wish I had that interest also.
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing out on something.
I don't watch it a lot. I mean, I don't watch basketball, pro basketball at all. I watch during March Madness because it's fun.
I don't watch pro basketball either, but I'm a Knicks fan. So, I mean, I can watch a lot of games and
not
watch
like
a lot of pro.
Well, it's like being a Mets fan, honey. You can
see
always...
that's part of the club rights. You say, oh, I don't watch a lot, but they do really, really watch
a lot. All right, so...
Talk about it all the time.
You mentioned serious news, though, and you can't get much more serious than this. Confronted with dramatic video, South Carolina authorities have charged a white police officer with murder in connection with the fatal weekend shooting of a black motorist. The video, shot by a witness, appears to show North Charleston City Patrolman Michael Thomas Slager firing multiple shots at a fleeing 50-year-old Walter Scott, who was wounded in the back from a distance several times, collapsed, and then was handcuffed. The officer walked away from Scott, made a radio call, and later is seen in the video dropping something by Scott's side. An attorney representing Slager released a statement on Monday saying the officer felt threatened and that Scott tried to grab his client's stun gun. On Tuesday, the attorney dropped Slager as a client, which I would say might be a bad sign for Slager. Slager was charged after being arrested by state police. North Charleston Mayor Keith Summey says the officer made a, quote, bad decision and was wrong. Scott's brother, Anthony Scott, questions what would have happened in the case had there been no video, and I think that's a fair question and a good jumping-off point for the panel this morning.
Well, it really does. We've been talking about this for days now in all of these different cases. It changes the whole game that people have these little tiny cell phones that can record all this stuff. I watched the video and raised instructions, and it really is very alarming.
Oh, wow. I want to know who took it. I think
we'll
I agree
eventually.
With the family. Yeah, I think it will come out. I agree with the family that was pretty heroic. He was right there.
Right, he could have
right
gotten
there,
shot.
Just across a chain link fence with a guy he had just watched shoot another man in cold blood.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of guts.
And then he kept filming.
And moved video. Closer. If you remember that, there's action if you've seen it, and the officer moves from the original place where they began, and the cameraman follows him. It's stunning and horrible, and how nervy that these police officers put in that absolutely fake account. And would have gotten away with it. It's so
Oh,
alarming.
In the old days, they would have they gotten would away have. With it.
They did get away with it.
Yeah, no picture, no, it never happened.
Right.
So a man dies for a broken taillight.
Right.
It's awful.
This is one more example in the continuum of black lives don't matter, poor people's lives don't matter, people with guns and power are the ones that are calling the shots. There was, if you watch this video, there was absolutely no reason for that cop to be shooting at all. The guy was running away from him.
And not fast, and I not, might add.
Right. He was running away. He had a broken taillight, driving while black. I mean, there's all the things that, you know, we've been hearing about and talking about.
And it was a big, expensive car, too. I want to pick up on something that Rosemary said that I think is so telling, and that is the guts of the guy who is taking the, the picture. Because, you know, if there's, I saw him take something black out of his pocket.
Yeah.
Could be that he was next.
Yeah. Right. He could have, that cop could have just turned around, shot the guy,
and painted him as a comrade.
Right. And to take his phone, that would have been it. I mean, you know, but now with these phones and the dash cameras and everything else, one would think that police would be a little more careful and more accountable.
Here are two other things I want to know. What is this policeman's record before this? He's been on the force for over 5 years. I think that will come out. And the other thing is, the guy has been shot at least 3 times, right? He's been fired at 8 times. He's on the ground. The officer handcuffs his hands behind his back.
I thought the same thing.
What the heck? Why isn't he doing CPR or calling an ambulance?
The police report. Now, this is why I think more people will be called on the carpet here in the department. The police report said CPR was performed.
Right. There's none of that we could see.
Not on the video.
Nope.
In no way. I think that there is a danger, however, in this case so early to jump to the racial angle. Listen,
we're in South Carolina.
Hang on. Scott's attorney even said he's not the Scott family attorney said he's not willing to make that statement at this time. He can't get in someone's head. I think it's more important after we see this policeman's record, as Rosemary mentions, before we make that jump. But what's clear is that Walter Scott was running away, and not fast. The officer didn't try to chase him and just unloaded the magazine.
The real question is, what happens at a jury trial? If the guy, in other words, juries are loath to convict policemen of anything. So we're making some progress here. If grand juries are willing in some of these cases to indict, that's good. But that's ham sandwich stuff, as we know from Saul Wappler.
Yeah. There's no way this can't go to a court, but I'm not so sure it'll go to a jury. It could go to a judge.
Because of the
evidence, and the police want to keep things quiet. This is a first degree murder charge.
Right. This is very much like Ferguson in terms of demographics. You have the African Americans make up 47% of the residents. Whites account for 37%, yet the police department is 80% white.
Yep.
It's the same dynamic over and over again.
I want to make one other point. Policemen have a tremendous amount of power. Mm-hmm. They do. And I have seen specifics in which some white kid gets fresh with a cop, or what the cop sees as fresh. And believe me, that ain't pretty either.
Nope.
So, it's easy to jump to the racial thing. And there was a piece on our news just a few seconds ago, which said that a comprehensive report in, I think it's Massachusetts because it was Lavoulis voicing it, but that the number of black stops far exceeded the number of white stops. We know about driving while black. But policemen have a tremendous amount of power. And we expect them to be trained. We expect them to be psychologically fit. In other words, that when we hire them, they have to be basically balanced people. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I've certainly seen policemen who are not psychologically balanced, who are willing to beat up on the first so-called provocation, and who have, and slap faces and do this kind of thing. And that is why it's so important to make sure we do this hiring right.
There is some background on this case in the great piece on the New York Times. And first of all, from the reports that seem to be confirmed, Scott ran from the car immediately upon...
Yeah, that was not a good move.
No. Okay. And he had been arrested some 10 times, mostly for back child support. And one of his relatives said he owed back child support, didn't want to be arrested again. But the The best quote in this New York Times piece by Michael Schmidt and Matt Apuzzo is this. The Supreme Court has held that an officer may use deadly force against a fleeing suspect only when there is probable cause that the suspect, quote, poses a significant threat of death or serious physical injury to the officer of others. Now, Walter Scott was tased. Regardless of if mm-hmm. he was blue, yellow, green, red, white, he was tased. He ran away. He was 15, 20 feet away from this officer. How was the, he was unarmed. How is there a serious threat to the officer or anybody else? It's a pretty damning video.
There wasn't. There was no threat.
Here's something we'll I want to see. For the past 2 days, we have just been beating ourselves with whips on the back for a big journalism mistake. Rolling Stone ran an article about a rape case that didn't exist, and we have been pulling it apart, making sure, wow, could this ever happen to us? What do we do differently? Should someone be fired? I want to see cops doing this. This is not just one case now. It's happening over and over again. This case is outrageous. Where are the cops saying, we have to make sure this doesn't happen?
Well, you have the mayor of this southern town. I watched him this morning, getting up and being very mayoral, and but being angry and saying this should not have happened. It's a southern town, a southern town. So things are changing.
Well, you know, I got pulled over. I was on my way back from Ankrum in Columbia County.
I know it well.
Yeah. And I got pulled over because I didn't have a headlight, and I'm here to tell the tale.
They didn't shoot you.
The guy came over. He wanted to know if there was anything wrong because I had flashed my lights because I was going from brights to regular because it was dark. You know, are you okay? He was very solicitous. You have a headlight out. I was like, oh, because I had just had it fixed, you know. And and he said, well, have a good night. Be safe.
You know, that's the way it's supposed
to
be.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
Although in New York.
But I'm a middle-aged white woman.
Yeah, there's also, it's not just a southern thing. Let's not forget the Staten Island case, which is among the worst I've seen, too, where the man selling loose cigarettes is just put into a, killed over that.
Yeah.
Horrible. So there need to be good policemen that
and
we keep reminding readers that there are,
right.
who ought to be sitting down saying, how can this keep going on? How can this happen?
All right, let's take a break. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. We're joined by Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. 24 minutes after 9, let's take a break. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Whistling Kettle Tea Shop and Cafe in Ballston Spa. Celebrating the one-year anniversary of the cafe in downtown Troy, New York, featuring a private room for parties and special events, thewhistlingkettle.com. Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more, northshire.com. SUNY Ulster, offering the Fast Finish Entrepreneurship Certificate to help build skills with business plans, QuickBooks, and more, online or on campus in as little as 6 months, sunyulster.edu/entrepreneur. And Project Native, hosting their 5th Environmental Film Festival Saturday and Sunday with a screening of Just Eat It, Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Mahewi in Great Barrington. ProjectNative.org for showtimes.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined today on the panel by Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Alan Shartok. And the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. I believe we have some mail.
We do. We heard from Ken, who said, video. After Abu Ghraib's revelations and under court order not to destroy them, the CIA destroyed waterboarding torture videos for the same reason this SC cop, South Carolina, wishes the video didn't exist. Damning in your face evidence of guilt. Okay, and that is from Ken. And then Tony wrote and said, Cop Slager lied to his attorney, which is why attorney dropped him. Cop Slager should get the death penalty to deter such murders. Rochester cops have tried to stop homeowners from filming from their own porches. Now I believe Michael Brown was shot in the back in the exact same way after the scuffle, too. Always after a scuffle, cops are all hyped up and will overreact. Well, I think I don't want to get in the middle of the letter, but, you know, you can't say all cops. You just can't.
Absolutely not.
Because
a distressing number. Okay. As we keep seeing.
Also, after a scuffle, cops are all hyped and will overreact. For this reason, some departments required another officer to make handcuffing if fellow cops come to the chase to prevent the cop who fought from delivering premature, quote, justice, as when Slager emptied all 8 rounds from his service revolver.
I still can't understand why the officer, Slager, didn't run after Scott, because he was not running fast. No. He was not far away. He was still within 8 or 9 feet when the officer pulled the gun, on the video anyway, mm-hmm. as far as I can tell. I still don't understand. And, I mean, you hear on the Albany right. police all the time on our scanner, which is on in the newsroom, in foot pursuit.
Right.
They're all, you know, that's what you do. You chase after them. If you can't catch them, you call for backup and you say, I'm on such and such a road. Send
and the
backup.
Other officer appears in the video too quickly, so he was in the neighborhood. Why he could have also just said, "The guy's running, catch him here." I don't know. That's a very good question.
Okay, so Jacob says we need dash cams and personal cams in Massachusetts and New York. There have been any questionable stops here in Berkshire County. I guess he means many. I doubt the police and district attorneys associations would let any such legislation pass. However,
well, that's a good question. Will there be body cams in the future? I suspect there will be.
So I would mean.
You mean for cops?
Yeah.
I thought some of them already had them.
Well, I think in some places they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we heard from John Morning, if not mistaken, the mayor stated in the news conference that he regretted the officer acting improperly. I fear that this statement will immensely complicate the prosecution of this case.
Why?
And, well, because, you know.
Person and authority giving judgment.
Well, mm-hmm. also, you know, Shelley Silver is around there. As soon as something happens and it gets tremendous play in the newspapers, the first thing that the defense team does is to come around and grab all of that stuff to show that can't get a fair trial.
And now the FBI is going to be investigating
this.
Yes,
exactly. Well, there's this video. I don't see how you can make much of a case.
Somebody will say it's not real. You know, somebody will try to say that.
Well, R says, they say that no planes ever hit the World Trade Center.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So R says, the video from South Carolina is awful. If this kind of thing can happen in 2015, then just imagine the nonsense that went on back in the days of Jim Crow.
Absolutely.
And all like that. That's what I got so far, except we do have one thing here from the president of the University of Albany. His office has sent out a very impressive All You Albany Community Connections thing. We have asked the president, like every other president of every other college around here, to be on our air, and he doesn't seem to want to show up.
Okay.
So what kind of community connections are we talking about here?
I have no comment.
You're a faculty member. I wouldn't expect that. Yeah.
Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Oh. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. The time is 9:33. It's a Wednesday morning. We are halfway through a Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue this week. Libby Post is here today. Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok. The email address, roundtable@WAMC.org. Alan, what's in the mailbag?
Oh, well. Chuck says, can't police be trained to shoot to impair as well as shoot to kill? That might then create an expectation of prudence instead of just blasting away at every situation. Our friend Don says, maybe guns are the problem. As you know, in England, I don't think the bobbies carry.
They do now.
Oh, they do now.
They do now, but it was a long time coming.
Yep. Okay. And Jeffrey says, what makes this case especially damning for the officers that Walter Scott was a 50-plus-year-old man, not exactly fleet-footed. I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Ray has been making the point that the guy was not fleet-footed.
No, he was not.
I have no doubt in my mind that had Scott been white, a foot pursuit would have ensued. It's as though he'd rather empty his clip in an unarmed black man than give chase. Disgusting, says Jeff.
And a waste of his energy.
And Michael says, hello, panel. Seems to me the right question is this. How often has the possession of a gun by a policeman actually deterred crime and saved lives? And this, is it really at all justifiable for police to carry lethal force in their holsters?
Yes,
warm
it
wishes.
Is. Yes, of course. Yeah, it's sure. saved many lives and sure. it's protected many people. So, yes, the answer to that question is yes.
All I can say, says David, is I think the most recent shooting was terrible, but sometimes I can understand police feeling anxious about walking the beat. I currently live in downtown Albany, and Central Avenue can be a tough neighborhood to walk through. Just putting it out there, he
Well, that's
says.
A good segue to
indeed,
an announcement indeed. We wanted to talk about.
I love it when the listeners provide the sort of tendons between
yes.
the
segue. Yeah.
The Albany County District Attorney's Office says it's conducting an independent investigation of the death of a man who died in police custody after officers subdued him with a stun gun. Prosecutor David Soares released a brief statement yesterday announcing the investigation into the death of 39-year-old Albany resident Donald Ivy Jr. last Thursday. Albany police said officers started talking to Ivy at 12:36 a.m. Thursday on a street near his home. Police say Ivy became aggressive and officers used a stun gun on him. Ivy ran off but was soon caught. He suffered a medical emergency and lost consciousness, then died later at a hospital. Three officers are on involved in this are on paid administrative leave while the police department reviews the case, and now David Soares' office is involved. Who wants first?
Well, I think it's the right thing to do. You know, nobody should be. Albany Police, South Carolina Police, New York State Police. No one should be above the law. They've got an opportunity here to do an investigation to see what really happened. You know, whether there was actual wrongdoing here, we don't know, and we won't know until an investigation is done. But, you know, this man, you know, this man didn't have to die either. That's really
the bottom
line. Well,
he had an underlying
line.
Medical condition.
Yeah, I know he did. But, you know, it's like, is it absolutely necessary that we have to shoot a taser at somebody?
Yeah, I think use of tasers is something that
it's really
this is hardly the first case of someone with an underlying medical condition.
Right. Well, it depends.
Now, what ends up dying?
What would you rather have an officer do if, and we're taking this now, we weren't there, so we're taking this with the evidence we have that the acting police chief, and this is quoting the Times Union, said the incident began when the officers tried to question Ivy. The chief said the confrontation became physical. We will take this as gospel for the moment. Officers used a taser at least once, but it didn't work, and the fight continued. Now, would you rather have officers, as in South Carolina, open fire? Or would you rather have them use a non-lethal form?
I don't think those are the only choices. I think that there's probably some sort of technology with tasers, lower the dosage, that you can disable someone without killing them.
But the other issue is this man was just walking around Arbor Hill. He wasn't doing anything, and they felt the need to stop him. He was walking around.
He was known, too. He was a known man in the community.
Yeah, you know.
But, you know, I do want to give a shout-out to Soares, who he was critical of the way the prosecutors in Missouri handled Ferguson, mm-hmm. and he seems determined not to do the same thing. He's very open about what he's doing. He will talk with people in the community, I suspect, when this investigation is done. He does at least appear to be trying to do the right thing, and I'm happy to see that.
Okay. Well, If the reports that we have are to be believed, and right now we have no reason not to believe them, officers, when they saw that Ivy could not breathe, took the handcuffs off, called firefighters, and continued CPR.
Right.
Before. So it seems like they did all the things that were not done in the South Carolina case.
Right.
Yes. But, again,
why were they trying to question
him? What was the deal to begin with?
I know.
He was just walking around.
Well, Libby, you know, I mean, in all fairness, that may be true. But it also may be true that there are certain things that white and black officers see when on patrol that raises suspicion. The hour that they're there, what they're doing, what stores they're looking into.
12:36 a.m.
If he was, like, hanging out on a stoop and handing somebody some money, and there was a drug deal going down, okay, maybe. But he was just walking in Arbor Hill.
Well, the fact pattern as expressed by Libby.
Right.
Well, that's, I mean, Arbor Hill is also an area where there is community policing. And so some of the problems that have resulted in confrontations in other places were not happening here in Albany. That's why the investigation is really important.
Once again, the email address here, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Before we shift topics here, Alan, anything in the mailbag?
There are about 10.
That's right.
Okay.
A Catholic could say it too, right?
All right. Good morning. The police in the UK are not routinely armed. There are special armed response units, and that's from Jess. Anybody? No. Okay. Dennis says, retired officer, it's a bad shooting. An officer will have to account. However, surprised by WAMC discussion, especially use of hyperbole, shootings in cold blood. Who said cold blood?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Shot a man in the back 8 times. Wow.
Right.
Pretty cold.
Obviously, officer obviously chased victim from abandoned vehicle and then had to close quarters struggle over officer's struggle of black plastic taser, which victim dropped to the ground when officer reached for his firearm and victim fled. Officer could not immediately chase without picking up the taser. My advice is to put yourselves in the shoes of the officers. Okay.
And that's what the defense attorneys will do.
And how to enforce law and arrest suspects who flee, resist arrest, and struggle over non-lethal taser. Regardless, force, parenthesis, number of shots used by officer was excessive. So it should be a comma. Regardless, force, number of shots used by officer was excessive. That's from Dennis in Saratoga.
Okay.
Right,
fair enough.
All right. And then we heard from somebody who didn't sign. Geez, would your panel unarm all cops and let the bad guys run away?
No.
Really?
At least part of the panel.
Nobody is saying that.
Well, I'm just reading the letters, though. You want to argue with me?
Okay. Yeah, argue with Alan.
No, okay. I really don't want to argue with you, Alan.
Okay. However, Ray pointed out something to me earlier from the video that I did find very interesting. The police officer in question apparently dropped something black by the body of the guy, and it may well be that that was the taser. Now, as you know, it has not been unknown in the history of policing to drop a gun or something. In fact, there have been some officers who have been accused of carrying them around with them. Just so they can do that in case of a shooting. Why did the police question him in the first place? Even if they did everything else correctly, why stop and question him? Are we assuming he was up to no good?
Well, that's what we'll find out, I think.
That's not fair. It's 12:30 a.m. on a Thursday night. People go out drinking at the time all over the time. I do it with friends in Northampton frequently. Not that weird. And Cheryl says, dear folks, I totally agree with all your sentiments about police abuse of power and the guns. And my ex-roommate tried to strangle me, messed up my face. The cop tried to get me and to lie and say we had been sexually involved so he could arrest him as opposed to the truth. We were roommates only if I had to go down to the police station to file a warrant for his arrest. The policeman was trying to help me. They're frustrated by the ins and outs of the law as well. Thank you, Cheryl. Please, folks, when you write your letters, don't abbreviate. Don't give me twos. Don't give me fours. Just use the word. It's so much easier.
You are old school.
I am.
No emoticons or anything?
Emoticons?
You know, like the smiley faces and whatnot?
No.
No?
No, I read the letters. I want to read the letters.
Frowns.
I want to do justice to them. But too many twos and fours and sixes and whatever else.
All right.
You sound like a little bit from Brooklyn right then.
Yeah. You know? Okay. And then Charlie says, how did the unarmed cops fare during the Charlie Hebdo shootings?
There were no unarmed cops.
There were none.
They were armed and they didn't fare well.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's Hebdo. Charlie Hebdo was the name of the magazine.
Right, and you can't compare the shooting of an armed unarmed person with an
unarmed member of the community
with a terrorism incident. I mean, it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Joseph says, most troubling in this case and in the Michael Brown case is the complete neglect to initiate CPR or secure medical help.
Which is in the report. Now, maybe it happened afterward, but it would be very much afterward. This video went on for quite a while, and there was no CPR that I saw.
I agree. I've watched it many times.
And the guy was face down. If you're going to help somebody handcuffed, you put him face up.
And Deborah says, hello, panel. I think you've discussed this as far as you can until more information comes forth from the investigation.
Agreed.
There's nothing more that's new. Too many opinions on this right now just become more media spin, and that's from Deborah.
You know what, Deborah? You're right on, and thank you once again. A top aide to President Barack Obama says the White House's classified computer systems are secure while acknowledging vulnerabilities in its unclassified system. The comments come in response to a CNN report that Russian hackers got access to sensitive White House information, such as the president's private schedule. The White House says suspicious activity was detected in October on its unclassified network. And from what I have read, they're not quite sure the Russians aren't still in that system.
Well, let me just say that we've gotten ourselves into trouble, listening in on conversations with foreign leaders. So it's hard for us to say anything because clearly, no. I'll change that.
Okay.
I certainly suspect that we're doing the same thing.
Okay. There's two things about this story. One, why is the president's schedule on an unclassified system? That's nuts. It's like letting people run into the White House. And number two, it's making Hillary look pretty smart.
Or is it not making her look smart?
She didn't want to be in a system that's
but
vulnerable.
Who knows? Let's presume that the government and the high levels of the federal government have the best encryption and firewall technology. Oh, stop. Let me finish.
I'm stuttering. We can't assume that.
Hold it.
The White House didn't have the president's schedule encrypted.
Now, you see, you interrupted my flow.
I'm sorry.
Let's presume that the federal government has state-of-the-art security. Whether it can be hacked, another story. Let's not automatically presume that somebody who sets up, who works in a high level of government, also has state-of-the-art firewall and hacking stopping methods. In other words, doesn't this make Hillary's use of a private email system look worse?
Oh my God, I couldn't even follow that long, involved hypothetical answer. No,
it's not a hypothetical. It's not
Hillary
hypothetical
was trying
at all.
To avoid
Please,
this.
Please, Raymond, let her answer the
It's not hypothetical at all.
Okay, now you've had your say. Now she.
Yeah, I think Hillary knows of a lack of. They're just careless. I mean, time and again, we've seen that they're just careless with information. And I think she's now is looking pretty smart about it.
And I want to add.
Couldn't disagree more.
Okay. And I want to add that every day we get this in the press, get missiles from the governor's office saying the governor's schedule. And then it says the governor will be
here
in
there's
New York
public
today.
Public and private
in New York
schedules.
Today. Yeah. No, but I mean,
without any public appearances.
Yeah, I think it goes to the idea of at least appearing to share information about what your leaders are up to.
What I find interesting is you have this story, and then you have the other story that we were maybe going to get to about how long we've been tracking people's phone calls. And we have...
Billions.
Yeah, billions of phone calls. And so we have the
for
ability
years.
To do that for years and years and years before Oklahoma City this all started,
mm-hmm.
and that was 95. You know, so we have... We have the technology. We can rebuild him to do that, but we don't have the technology to be able to keep the hackers out. I mean, I know it's difficult, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I agree with
Rosemary.
What's your phrase? Yeah,
why
with Rosemary? Because nobody knew Hillary was using her own email address, and they didn't know that
she
there was this
hacked.
Other server.
How do you
so
know that nobody
hacked.
Knew? How do you know?
Only the people within, the fact of the matter is they could have found out if they hacked into the State Department's email.
Which they did.
But they did. But nobody, it seems like nobody hacked her server.
This is from
that we don't know.
This is from CNN. Here's a quote. State Department computer system has been bedeviled by signs that despite efforts to lock them out, the Russian hackers have been able to re-enter the system. One official says Russian hackers have, quote, owned the State Department system for months, and it's not clear the hackers have fully been eradicated from the system.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to know it. You don't have to have evidence. This is the number one target in the world. The White House, the State Department,
and the Clintons.
Top government. No, not private people. No.
She's a private person.
She operated like a private person with her private server is what I mean. No, I do not think she's a private person, but she operated on a separate server system.
Yeah, we should go back to the good old espionage days.
Well,
we
still have it. It's still there.
Nothing was online.
Why are we keeping this information on computers? Which there's no system that totally keeps out hackers.
Back to papyrus. Hey, let's take a break. Dave Hopper, we'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Ad Workshop, a Lake Placid-based integrated marketing agency with a recently opened satellite office in downtown Albany, adworkshop.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and a 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more, Harolds.com. And Maybe Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, New York, presenting Kurt Vonnegut in Schenectady with Professor K.A. Laity, Saturday at 2 p.m., SchenectadyHistorical.org.
Yes, the placid music underlies the turmoil here during the break. It's the roundtable panel, 9:51
Chairs
on a Wednesday.
Chairs are upturned. Papers are flying.
Yes. Libby Post is here. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, who for once is sort of the quiet one.
Yeah,
which
you
it's
and
amazing.
I are fighting. We're
it's
usually
amazing.
Allies. This is really bad.
Well, we're not fighting.
And wait till you start on this one.
It's a spirited. I won't say anything I just said in the break. No. I'm just the host. So the Royal Dutch Shell PLC is seeking court injunction to remove Greenpeace activists who boarded a vessel carrying a Shell oil drilling rig across the Pacific. Shell USA spokeswoman Kelly Op de Wieg says by email the company Tuesday asked a U.S. District Court judge in Anchorage to order protesters to disembark immediately. Op de Wieg says boarding a vessel on the high seas is dangerous and is not a peaceful demonstration. Six Greenpeace activists protesting Arctic offshore drilling Monday boarded the heavy lift vessel Blue Marlin about 750 miles northwest of Hawaii. The ship is carrying the Polar Pioneer, a semi-submersible drilling unit that Shell will use this summer in the Chukchi Sea off Alaska's northwest coast if the company moves forward with exploration plans. Rosemary, you suggested that we put this on the list. I let you have first dibs.
Oh, thank you. I know Greenpeace has been accused in the past, including by myself, of taking really silly and dramatic tactics. I've said if they want to really clean up the ocean, why don't they just have pick up litter campaigns and pick up bottles and things rather than these gestures. In this case, though, I'm struck by this grand gesture. It's really dramatic and it's on TV and all that. They're trying to call attention to the fact that the U.S. is now going to allow drilling in the Alaskan Arctic. I did not know this. I think that's the sort of thing that you make a decision about that after a lot of discussion and investigation. It's incredibly fragile environmental territory, and we're going to drill there? Why?
The Russians are doing it presumably already, yes?
Yeah, they are. And Greenpeace hasn't just narrowed, hasn't limited its protests to the Americans. They were under arrest for a long time for protests in Russia for this same thing. This is a planetary issue. How do you call attention to these issues if not for doing something
like
this?
Well, it's much easier now.
So I applaud them. It's very brave and dangerous and good for them.
But what's interesting in this, just to add into this whole thing, this is a Shell rig,
Shell Oil.
Right, which just bought BP.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, BP, perpetrators of some of the worst environmental disasters. And now it's... Now we're getting to
the
point.
Is it BP? I think actually we need to check on this. I think it's BG, the liquefied gas.
BG.
It's not BP.
Oh, sorry.
No,
I thought it was BP.
Never mind.
Never
as
mind.
As Roseanne Rosanna Dana would say.
All right,
never
I was
mind.
Wrong. You're right.
But it's still Shell, which is a big multinational company, and governments are being control by these big companies. I think Greenpeace is right to call attention to it.
Well, yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, you are right that that this is a bad policy. At least I agree with that. It's a bad policy. You are not right that anybody can board anybody else's boat
it's civil disobedience.
And get admired for it because, in fact, they're breaking the law. If somebody broke into your car and said, I don't like the color of your car, whatever else, you know, you and what were you going to say?
When Martin Luther King crossed that bridge in Selma, he was breaking the law. I sure did admire that. Civil disobedience is to be admired in some cases.
It's a bad law.
It's a bad law. And that's
in that case, it was a bad law.
And this is, too.
Yeah,
that's
Mahatma Gandhi. People will say to these day, to this day, that the British had an absolute right to do what they did in India, that they were on the side of the law, and it wasn't until we had Gandhi doing civil disobedience.
So the real question is, where's the line? In other words, what crosses the line?
Better question is pragmatically, what change do they hope to effect from doing this? Now, it's a lot easier to get publicity when you can upload your own video of people scaling the ropes going up.
Yes, sir. I think that's what they're what they're doing. And here's one change. I didn't know they were about to drill in the Alaskan.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say you didn't know. And when
consciousness
you said you didn't
raising is a big part of nonviolent civil disobedience. I think this is in a grand tradition.
And in a time when leaders are saying global warming is not real, and believing in junk science and not recognizing the threat of this kind of drilling to the environment and to the world, you need to be able to
I would
to
say potential planetary
floor.
Destruction does not cross the line you just talked about.
Okay, so this story is still going on. They're still on board, and we will follow it closely here, and we'll probably talk about it again when it comes to some resolution, assuming it does. Now, before we go, we have three.
I just want to say very quickly, I hope Rosemary turns off all the heat in the winter, next winter.
Ouch.
And while I made a mistake.
I would, but my mother, I can't let her freeze.
And while I made a mistake, it wasn't BP, it was BG Group. It's still a pretty large merger, which will have great financial implications as we get our way towards monopoly oil and monopoly capital.
Well, it's the roundtable panel on WAMC. Only a couple of minutes left here, 2 minutes or so. Gotta bring this up. This is a headline for the Daily News, but it's everywhere, including at WAMC.org. Remorseful creator of Scary Lucy, Lucille Ball statue, apologizes, vows to redo it for free. It should never have been cast. Have you seen the statue?
Didn't he look?
Here's what the statue looks like, Alan.
No, it's just terrible.
She looks like a zombie from Walking Dead.
Just terrible. I mean, I'm not a Lucille Ball fan. I'll be honest with you. I never liked the program.
Oh, my God.
No,
oh my God.
No, I actually hated the program. So I didn't watch it, but I have to tell you, this looks nothing whatever.
Yeah.
Like
it looks only passably human. Dave Polin, sculptor of the Lucille Ball statue in Celeron, New York, says it's by far my most unsettling sculpture. High praise indeed. It's actually been there for about 5 years, but only now a Facebook campaign says, get this out of here.
My son has the theory, the guy wanted $10,000 at first to fix it. He must be a horrible sculptor, and that's how he really makes his money. Okay, I'll fix
there it.
There it
is,
you gotta pay me.
Prediction, this will be worth a fortune when they take it out of here. Somebody, if I had the money, I would buy this and scare my neighbors. You want to walk your dog on my lawn? Here, take a look at Lucy, all right?
I've been in Jamestown a couple of times in the past year, and this place, Celeron, is near there. I mean, it is a shrine to Lucille Ball.
Mm. Wow,
it really is, because that's where she was from. And
it's the ballpark.
Right. And there was absolutely no. I mean, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. Didn't he look at a picture?
Brian Shields said it looked more like Fred Mertz. That was his comment yesterday.
That's funny. That's funny.
Well, we're just about out of time. Email address here is...
It isn't so.
It is. I'll give you the email address. You can always send your emails late that won't get read tomorrow. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, spirited. Well done. Nice to have you here. We'll see you tomorrow. Libby Post, always great to have you here. Thanks for being in solidarity with me on the UConn thing.
Hey, no problem.
Alan Shartok, you were here as well. Good job.
I was here as well.
Yeah.
You do remember you were here,
I did say good job. Congratulations, all. It's the Roundtable.